Okay. Who wants to say who we are? Why are we here?
Okay, I'm Elizabeth Hanson Smith, and I've been with EVO since 2002 when Vance did his first webheads.
Wow. So, Elizabeth Ann, we've all just come over today, the 17th of November. We've all just come over from a global education conference talk, which Vance gave about why. Okay, the Vance's global education talk, and we said we'll come here to discuss the differences between female MOOCs and ex MOOCs, and where is EVO in this position of MOOCs? Does that?
Okay. Yeah, I'm Vance, Vance Stevens in Aligned UAE, one of the EVO coordinators. I've been the coordinator since 2003, I think, as Elizabeth has been, I'm sure, Elizabeth Hanson-Smith, and Elizabeth A. has been a coordinator for a long time, and we've got a lot of experience here with Nelly and Nina. And I'm going to put some slides here so at least you'll get to see what we were talking about. I was busy in the other, I was setting that up the hour before I actually went on the session. So we were in the GEC conference in another Blackboard Collaborate room. And that one I set up, but I did not set this one up. I just kind of monitored it. So anyway, maybe you guys could carry on saying who you are and why you're here, and meanwhile, get some slides up here so we'll have something to focus on if we need to.
Well, in the other session at the very end, we started talking about participant-driven content and whether we actually had that in EVO. And I think there have been a number of sessions that did do that. Vance's, of course, are the main ones because he was really focused on trying to get participant-driven content as part of all of his courses. So, for instance, in becoming a webhead, there are various tools, but excuse me, but we were allowed to formulate our own projects to use these tools.
Encouraged to.
Right. I'm Nina Liakos, and I'm in the United States. My involvement with the EVO started when I participated in a session in 2006, and I've co-moderated a couple of sessions, and I've been a coordinator for, I guess this is my fifth year. And going back to that discussion, I don't know that, I mean, I haven't taken every EVO session, obviously, but it's just my impression that some sessions would be more participant-driven than others. I think Vance goes out of his way to encourage participants to declare their own objective and to learn what they want to learn. I think other sessions, and I think encouraged by us coordinators, because we keep telling people to, you know, build your syllabus, have your weekly tasks. So I'm thinking specifically of one of the sessions that I'm mentoring now, Teachers as Designers. I was looking at their second draft of the syllabus. Well, maybe there are many drafts, but the second one that I've looked at, and it was kind of overwhelming to me. There was just so much there. So I'm sure there are all kinds of permutations on a continuum from extremely participant-driven, and I'm going to hazard another guess, educators and copyright. Those moderators last year stated that they wanted to learn more about copyright, and that was their reason for offering the session. They were not putting themselves forward as experts on copyright. They wanted to learn about it. So I'm going to guess that there was more of an emphasis on learning together. I don't know if you'd call that participant-driven content exactly. I mean, you set up an EVO session and you give it a title and you sort of have a direction of where you're going to go. I don't know, I'm going to mute myself so somebody else can say something. I'm just rambling.
No, I'm very, very happy to hear you say, I mean, specifically, we must talk about that elsewhere, about educators and copyright.
That's exactly what Minecraft is about.
I would like to address the question of, is EVO a MOOC?
But I don't think that's the right question, because EVO is not one thing, it's a set of things, and each of them could be called a MOOC. A MOOC is a course. An EVO session, as we all know, is not strictly speaking a course, but I don't think the EVO is like Udacity or Coursera. It organizes MOOCs.
It's a platform,
puts them,
in a way.
You know, they're not the platform exactly. And some of our sessions are very small. Dream Act, the first year it was given, was around 10. And some are very large, over 1,000. Nellie remembers that experience. I'm sure she'll never forget it.
It's kind of MOOCs within
MOOCs.
Most
of them are from 50 to 300, I think. So not massive in the sense of ex-MOOCs, certainly, but certainly OOCs. Open online.
Like what?
OOSes, maybe? Open online sessions. I'm going to mute myself.
Well, if, you know, the courses that where I started considering this and, you know, really pondering, it was probably the one before last where Shelley got 1,000 people. That was a MOOC, you know. I think that it...
That was Nellie. Shelley's was like 875 or something.
Oh,
I don't think
okay.
She broke 1,000, but it was big.
But we're talking hundreds, you know.
Yeah.
Some people would say if you're over 100, you've got
that's
a MOOC.
That's a lot.
You know, so
Sure. Yeah. I think the you know what a MOOC is or isn't as important as the idea that this happens regularly, that people offer courses, and the courses have many different kinds of approaches. And I think Vance's multi-literacy was the most open in terms of participant-driven content than any of them. There was barely an agenda, wasn't there? You had some
books
that you wanted people to look at, but it wasn't a course, really. It was. Do we have a name for participant-driven courses? There isn't really one. I think the Global Learning Conference, where the classmen and said, "Oh, I have to leave. You guys just discuss among yourselves," and the whole session was discussing among themselves. That turned out to be the whole point. So people generated their own content, very literally. And it was purposeful. The person who started this session said, "Everybody just talk about what they want to," and it became a very interesting session.
I guess I'd like to ask what you all consider to be participant-driven content. Is that when participants say, "I want to learn X," and everybody goes along with that, or a group breaks off and goes along with that? Or is it that the moderators set up some choices and the participants can choose which track they're going to follow, or something else?
I was dealing with the PDF. Can you just repeat the essential part of that question?
What is participant-driven content?
I was kind of experimenting a lot because I wanted to see how things worked. I wanted to see how social networking worked. And I was reading a lot, listening to a lot of podcasts. Stephen Bounds recorded just about everything he records, just about everything he says in front of a bunch of people, and a lot more. Anyway, he was quite an influence on me, and then George Stevens, of course. So I was reading about these people, and Dave Cormier, also another really huge influence, and he was working with Jeff LeBeau, and so the way that they structured their meetings, their podcasts, you know, just all these communities that they were just talking to, having conversations in the communities. It's quite obvious where the learning was. In some of the conferences they put on in the early days, they had people like David Weinberg coming on and talking about some of the most interesting things I've seen is his debates with Keane. Who's that guy who wrote the Cult of the Amateur? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Mm-mm.
Anyway, he was debating David Weinberg, two opposite sides of the planet. I just really fell on the Weinberg side. And there's something else that, actually, when I was in New York City shortly after 9/11, I found in a bookstore, there's a book for 25 cents. It was called The Clue Train Manifesto. I just picked it up. I had no idea what it was. And it turns out it's a book by all these guys I just mentioned. And it's a free book. I got ripped off. I paid 25 cents for it. But you can just download it. But Stephen Downs used to talk about it all the time. But it's just about how the culture behind collaboration and the things that I try to put in, I try to make happen in my courses or when I do a course like this, because I can't. This is my life, really. You know, in places I teach, I'm constrained. You know, like so badly. I just really want to get out, break out of that shell, and then other people break out with me. You know. Take somebody like Lane Marshall, for example, really enthusiastic. And the course that where she was a participant, she was probably the only one who really ate the Kool-Aid. There was somebody else from Melbourne, I remember, and he kind of dropped out and got really angry at us because he'd been at the races. And when he came back and checked his email, he had all this stuff to do. We were, you know, he couldn't believe it. You know, what are we talking about? You know. He gave up. He paid to join the course too. It was one of the TESOL PPOT courses. So, anyway, you never know. Sorry, I'm nattering on.
Elizabeth Ann has mentioned in the chat that she was concerned as teaching pronunciation differently. Mentor last year, because it looked like a course, and I quote, because the moderators really have knowledge, the participants do not. And I'd like to say that I think that there are a number of EVO sessions that are characterized. I mean, we are very lucky to have some real experts volunteering their time as EVO moderators, and they really do have something to share. The participants really do want to learn from them.
Yes.
And the participants are looking for the moderators to set the agenda. What participants are doing, I think, is deciding how much of it they're going to do, depending on their ability to do it. But in my response to Elizabeth, I said there are different models in EVO. I don't think, although we say in the moderator training that we're all learning together, but I'm not sure that what moderators are learning is the same as what participants are learning. Moderators are learning to moderate, and yes, obviously sometimes some participants may have more expertise in the topic or in an aspect of the topic than the moderators do. And in that case, the moderators are learning and adding to their own expertise. But
absolutely.
Have we ever said that EVO sessions have to be participant-driven in content?
It seems to me the exact opposite, because right now we are asking the moderators to set up their tasks. That is not participant-driven content, is it, if we ask them to set up the tasks?
Well, a course has to have structure, you know. I talked to George Stevens one time in the early days, and he told me that his job was to provide coherence. You know, he put the structure down. There's coherence if you lay out a syllabus, and then what happens after that? You know, if you actually follow the steps, well, then he would not. George Stevens wouldn't like that, because that takes learners down a prescribed path, and they're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to have chaos. They're supposed to find things overwhelming and then resolve that chaos. He says if you don't let them do that, you're eviscerating their learning. You're eviscerating the process. So that's just something I keep quoting, so it sticks in my mind. But
it doesn't have to be all one. I mean, you know, Stephen Downs is very, you know, doctrinaire about this, and it doesn't have to be that extreme.
No, of course not. I'm not disagreeing at all. I'm just, I think actually, you know, you have sessions for all the people who come. You have thousands of people signing up, and they need to choose. You know, you're in a department store. Not everyone goes to the same department, you know. So people have different needs.
Yeah.
Some people need
some learners feel they really do need a path through the material, and they want all the material to be given to them. Nellie was asking, is information the only people get from our EVO sessions? And I think EVO would not be as popular as it is if that was all that was being handed out. So obviously something else is going on that is of interest, because people stay with it and come back year after year and love the topics and love the moderators and really give us good feedback that
and become
the experience
moderators
is good. And become moderators, right. So there is something more than just content.
Yeah, and become coordinators, yeah. It's this giant volunteer effort.
It is.
But my favorite EVO session is probably podcasting in the ESL classroom. Mm. And, you know, I didn't know anything about podcasting when I took it. And I went through it twice, you know, once as a participant and another time as a participant mentor. And it was all set up. I mean, there was, it was really kind of rigid, you know, you have to set up a blog for your artifacts, and it has to have this many pages, and you're going to put the titles on these pages. I mean, more than it needed to be,
but the content of those pages was free.
Oh, the content, yeah. But that's like if I take a writing course, and the teacher gives me a topic, and I'm going to write an essay on that topic. The content is generated by me around that topic that's assigned. And that is pretty much what they did.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they assigned, a Skype interview with somebody. You could, you know, interview somebody else. They didn't set the topic for that. I think that one of the first assignments was to take a picture out your window and then describe it in the podcast. So that was pretty.
That's a typical
limited
writing assignment, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they were. So I'm just trying to say that there's a range in EVO, and different people are looking for different things in terms of participants, and different people are. You know, they learn in different ways. We all learn in different ways. And EVO allows a lot of flexibility.
I think to go back to the light. to go back to Eliza's, Elizabeth Ann's original question, is EVO a MOOC? It's a good question in a sense, because MOOCs themselves are nothing. I mean, they really are just a description of what happens when you set up a platform that allows people to get together and talk about a content. And that can be done in so many different ways, in a limited range of ways. But certainly I think EVO sessions demonstrate a whole range from ex-MOOCs to C-MOOCs. And I remember early in EVO, there was one person who shall remain unnamed who never talked to any of the participants in the chat sessions. He just delivered the content. And the participants went out and did what he said to do, and then they came back, and then they had another assignment, and they went and did that. Never had a discussion about any of this, which is typically the way Coursera MOOCs in engineering and computer science work. There's never any discussion. They don't even bother with discussion forum. They just do the assignments.
On the other hand,
I think EVO is a long way from that.
On the other hand, the Coursera MOOCs that I took, which were not in math and science, but take, for example, I took one called a Brief History of Humankind, I think. It was taught by a professor at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and the topic was what is usually called big history. And there were so many fora that my inbox became overwhelmed, and I had to deflect them and stop participating. But there were discussions about everything. I mean, for each week's lectures, there were multiple threads and multiple fora. It wasn't just like one per week.
These were started by the participants or by the professor?
Either one. You could, as a participant, you could start one, or I don't know about the professor, what role he had, because he had TAs that were, you know, if you had a problem, the TAs were the ones that were checking the problems. There was a problem thread and a technical problem thread. But there was a tremendous amount of discussion, so much that I had to close it down. I couldn't do it all. I didn't have time.
You can't elect to
so
have
there was
the
huge amount of discussion, but the professor was not participating.
And then
another one that I took from Coursera, it was on behavioral economics and taught by Dan Ariely at Duke University. They instituted office hours once a week in a Google Hangout, and they made the What people did was, I think, post questions. This was several years ago, so I don't remember, but I think people sent in questions, and the one of the TAs interviewed the professor. So the TA and the professor were in the hangout, and the TA is asking the questions, but the questions came from the participants, and the professor would answer them. So that was a little bit more interaction than the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. But you can do it. I mean, but because of the huge numbers, you know, 35,000, 50,000, you can't do it in the same way that we can do it with EVO.
Vance, you put up a slide, why online teacher trainers should know about CMOOCs. Did you want to talk a little bit more about CMOOCs or about this question that you've put up?
I just did. That's the talk.
Can I just finish what I said earlier about the teaching pronunciation differently? Because although they totally set up a course, they had not just one but three meetings every week. So that they were at different times for different people. They all turned out differently, of course. There was totally the interaction within this course. It was really quite remarkable. Sorry, Anne.
Well,
Elizabeth, was that TPD?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I was helping them set up their sessions. I remember all the different time zones they were coping with. from a very interactive group.
They certainly learned a lot on the different, on online modeling things.
Yeah, so I just had an interesting experience. I was on in GDC on one computer, which has PowerPoint on it, and on this computer, I'm on a Windows 8, which I have no commercial software loaded on. It's all, open office, things like that. So I tried to put my slides over here and upload them, but it blocked my PowerPoint and my PDF. So I had to go put myself in the chat on the machine with the applications on it, and I finally got the slides uploaded, but it was struggling with that for about 15 minutes. But in any event, that was just the discussion was going to be around that topic, so I just put it there. But you guys, you've got control. You can go backwards to the slide that we can talk about what we like here, but this session was meant to talk about to try. We're part of moderator training, so we're trying to inform moderators a little bit about MOOCs and on Bates's article, and that's an article about CMOOCs and XMOOCs, and seems that the description of a CMOOC strikes me as being something that's more what we do. But not everybody. So that's, that presentation just tells a little bit about what CMOOCs and XMOOCs are, and I could just maybe even go to that page where it explains. So if we can find it, let's see. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in this area, it'd be right about here. Here we go. So there's a slide that. Siemens' definition.
If I may, I think the CMOOC versus the XMOOC is still not really getting at the question. Whether you are communicative, that usually means in a MOOC context that you have a big forum and people talk to each other in the forum, versus an XMOOC where you're mainly just delivering the content. I think in between all that, or aside from all that, is a different category, which is where the participants create the content. And for Siemens, that a communicative MOOC has to be where you create the content. But that's not necessarily what happens all the time either. There's some middle ground where content or places to go explore are presented, and then participants do other kinds of things with the content. So
I think
knowledge creation and knowledge generation are really Siemens shtick, I think. But there's a place where you can say, hey, the participants don't know about any of this, so here it is. So both things happen. Sorry, Elizabeth.
But Elizabeth, they can get the information on their own. They don't have to be said the information. That's what he's trying to say, I think.
Well, and I agree with the idea of middle ground totally, and I do remember that both Vance and I said, having tried, having joined a CMOOC, a state-of-the-art CMOOC, we neither of us really went very far, in fact.
Say that again?
Well, I find if it's totally participant-generated.
You said Vance. Vance asked me to repeat. You said,
yeah,
Vance, as I did in the previous webinar, that having tried out CMOOC, we neither of us actually went very far with it.
Yeah?
Yeah,
but to me, that's not a problem. I mean, because it's a berry bush. You're supposed to be taking. Actually, I go in the MOOC, this one, this Rhizomatic Learning one, this one right here, Dave Cormier's MOOC. He would give, actually, he couldn't talk top down to people, but he would try to get them to talk about certain issues. And there was a lot of conversation about those issues, but really, what I learned in that MOOC was just by popping in on conversations and picking up little things, like there was a. Somebody made a diagram so you could see who was tagging what and who was connecting to everybody else. It was a, and actually he made it in such a way that I could set it up. I set it up for Multilit or whatever the tag was, EBO-MLIT. I set one up for that, to, you know, because it was something that I could do. You know, you could actually learn how to do this. The script was, he put the script there and you could actually make it work. So there was a little cluster of people who was kind of getting into that. So I sort of wandered into that and I listened to, I would download Dave's, what Dave said. One day he did breakout rooms. He had himself with, in the hangout and he made breakout rooms. That was his idea. But what Dave was, he was walking around his house with his tablet, with his earbuds in, and nothing was happening. So, anyway, it's kind of comical, but he's experimenting too. But
certainly, so, what Eva really brings, and I got a lot more from the multimedia MOOC which you did because of the encouragement from moderators. I mean, you know, I think this is a real key difference. I mean, you wander into a MOOC, no one's going, well, it's not true, but it's less likely that someone is going to bring this really positive encouragement which the moderators bring in Evo.
Well, people
in the,
are
in the Coursera
MOOC
that I took, there were quizzes that you could take, and the quizzes were multiple choice, and that gave you feedback on your learning. There was no human behind the feedback, which, you know, you wouldn't expect with the number of people. So I'm curious, Elizabeth Hansen, with your MOOC that you offer through Coursera, how are you able at all to incorporate connectivist strategies or is it purely X MOOC? Can you talk a little bit about how you do that?
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up, is that we have a very set curriculum and we go through it in a certain order, which would be anathema to Siemens.
Excuse me, Elizabeth, because of moderators who might not be aware of this that would listen to the recording, maybe you should just kind of say what it is you do and who with and give a little background.
Oh, okay. This was a project for the Department of State and the University of Oregon, and it's called Shaping the Way We Teach English, and it's a MOOC based on hundreds of hours of videotaping of classes around the world showing best practices. So for the MOOC, we selected portions of these videotapes that demonstrated certain things, like using integrated skills or alternative assessment. And we made 2 5-week courses. And these courses are they're in Coursera, that's the base. And we do a number of things that you did in your MOOC course. We have a very rigid kind of syllabus and sequence of presentation, which wouldn't have to be. I mean, you could actually take each week of the course in any order, but we felt people would be much more comfortable doing it as a kind of traditional syllabus. However, one of the things we do with 30,000 people is have students grade each other's papers. So they write a lesson plan and then they have a rubric to help them evaluate other people's lesson plans. And in doing so, of course, they collect the lesson plans and have them to use themselves. So if the lesson plans turn out as we hope, everybody gets a whole bunch of lesson plans to use as teachers. And then in the process of doing that, there's forums. And I was mentioning in the text chat here that if the content is totally participant generated, it tends to generate into anecdotes. You know, I do this with my class, or I do that with my class, and oh, isn't that great, and how interesting that is. But you're not really progressing anywhere very much. You're not using really the research that's out there, which can sometimes be very counterintuitive. And we don't deal very much with that end of things because our MOOC is, oh, thank you. Somebody just put it up on the screen there. Yeah. So you get to see me and Deborah Healy and Jeff Magato talking. We put this all together. But I think the course is interesting. We have 15 community TAs, we call them. And these are 15 people who have taken the course and volunteered to help us moderate it. So they go in and really talk to all the people in the forums. I mean, they're just everywhere, and they're talking to people all the time. And, of course, we also have a course material errors forum, and we have a technical problems forum, and we have specific forums for the lesson plans we do, so you can ask questions directly about that of the course developers. We also do, once in the course, we do a Blackboard recording like this. So an Illuminate session where we usually have about only 60 people. Most people want to watch the recording. They don't want to be in the session for some reason. So this is a kind of blend of CMOOC and XMOOC. Yes, we are delivering content. We feel that people taking the course don't have time to wander around trying to figure out what TESOL is, what linguistics is, what pedagogy is. There's just so much that they don't know, that there's no place to start. So we give them a lot of that content. It's there for them to explore. And I'm always astonished at the quality of the discussions, because they really are exploring a specific material. They're doing a specific reading. They're looking at the same video together, and then they come together to talk about it and argue about it. And to me, that's a very fruitful use of a very short course in 5 weeks. So anybody want to have some questions about that, or why I think it's different? I also talk in the forums a lot. I tend to browse around, find an interesting thread, and take part in that.
It sounds to me like a course that is well designed to do what it's intended to do. And
it's very limited, but it does what it's supposed to do. Yeah. We have people come back and take the course 2 or 3 times, too, which is strange. But they feel like they can get more out of it each time, I think.
Is someone screen sharing here, because it's not working? I just wonder if we should switch that off, or anybody?
There really isn't any way to read all of the discussions. Nina, you asked in the text chat. With 30,000 people, and we require them to do at least 2 posts per week. Many of them do far more than that. So I can't read them all, but the CTAs seem to be able, because there's so many of them, they seem to browse around and do read a lot and answer questions. So
these are volunteers? Like Robert Walkman is one,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, they're volunteers. They've taken the course. They like it. They want to learn more about the inside working. We have a staff forum where each week we discuss one of the aspects of the course or one of the aspects of the pedagogy that's being presented. So they're learning also as they go along. I think it's very useful for them. And some of them have come back to be volunteers for multiple courses. You know, I think Robert Walkman has done it 3 times out of the 4 we've done. So, yeah, and it's a huge course. I mean, 29,000 people is a lot of people. And we have about a 10% completion rate, which is considered very high in the MOOC community. 5% is more normal, I think.
Yeah, that attrition rate doesn't really bother me at all, because, like, as you say, how many people are in the course? So what is?
Well, there's 30,000 in the course, and you have 10% completing.
3,000.
It's 3,000 people.
Yes.
It's still a lot of people.
You've trained 3,000 people per course.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It's amazing.
That's amazing. You know, the 27,000 who fell by the wayside, they may be back, you know, who knows, maybe they learned something.
They'll take it again, sure.
Yeah,
sure. And we do have tests every week, so you can, and we have a previewing quiz, which is not counted, where they can see what they already know, Then they watch the video, they do the reading, they participate in discussions, and then they take another quiz at the end to see what they've learned. So there's these constant checks along the way, but meantime they're working on their lesson plans, which are a really big deal. Some people have never done a lesson plan before. They have no idea what a lesson plan is or what it's supposed to do. So it's a valuable course. And I think as you see people coming back and the comments they make, they find it's a valuable course. So really, Elizabeth, I'm really pleased with this as a thing.
It sounds great. I'm just wondering, the only quizzes that I've experienced in Coursera have been multiple choice or true-false.
Right.
I presume that's pretty much what you're restricted to. Anything beyond just those very objective, kind of black and white, only one right answer.
Yeah, but multiple choice doesn't necessarily mean simplistic.
It often does in the courses that I took. For some of them, I could go through, I'd not listen to the lecture, and probably pass the quiz.
Right. So, but on the other hand, you're an experienced teacher. We have people who've never
been in the classroom. I'm an experienced multiple choice test taker.
Also that.
Right. Then I did another MOOC out of Duke University on the future, the past and future of higher education with Kathy Davidson. Mm-hmm. And she used the quizzes as review material. Basically, her quizzes, they were multiple choice and all the answers were correct. So there were no distractors. So basically you went through the quiz and reading through the quiz and checking off the things, you reviewed the content of the week. That was another way to do it. Kathy doesn't really believe in tests, I think.
As long as we're archiving here, we probably ought to get Nelly to say a few words about, ask her the similar questions. So what percentage people matriculate from her courses? How many books does she have? Is she still here? And she's in the text chat? Yes, she is.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, so I'd kind of like to go in about 10, 15 minutes because dinner is being prepared. I'm hungry.
You're so lucky. I'm preparing dinner as I listen to you guys. So one hand is a knife. My iPhone is in my, on my pants. Pocket, so-called pocket. In any case, I'm really enjoying the conversation. What I'm experiencing right now is another MOOC organized by McGill University. It's called GROOCS, which is groups on MOOCs. They claim to be the first, which is kind of funny, but it's on ethics. So the idea was in the first week to create groups on different topics. So this is where the content led by the participant took place. People could do anything, any social cause for grouping. And then they grouped up, you would, ask people, come join me, people would kind of recruit members into their groups. And it was really a great idea, an amazing idea, kind of a CMOOC that, George and I'm sure Stephen may be proud, but it's on ethics. And ethics does not work for it's not like Moodle where you can have openness or like blog, anywhere you can have open areas. I think Coursera might be better, but the discussion forums on ethics are so primitive. I don't know where and who came up with such a platform. So apparently McGill University didn't know this. I mean, I knew it and, they wouldn't listen to me. So I said, okay, let them, kind of let things go wrong. And anyways, I'm supposed to be quiet about this because it was a mess. But they went on and they said, well, we're not interested in the fact that things aren't working. We're interested in doing this for the sake of doing it. You know, like all of Canada has, you know, like they're advertising how great we are. We're doing this social thing and we're trying to change the world. So, you know, basically they're not interested. They're interested in researching what happened there. And I was really shocked. I mean, you don't care about the participants. You don't care that things aren't working. And they recruited, I mean, I volunteered just to see how things work out. So they recruited volunteers to be community facilitators. And we were spending hours discussing various things. I mean, literally hours as a community of community facilitators. And they're like, you know, they're full of themselves. Things aren't working, and they're plodding along. You know, you've got to give them maybe credit for that. But if the platform, I mean, didn't somebody check the platform? Don't you care that the platform doesn't cater to any kind of communication? So.
You know, Nellie, that's because so many of these things were set up by engineers and computers.
I know, I know.
You know,
exactly.
They don't care about discussion. They just want to do the formula.
Yeah, but I'm saying university, I mean,
right.
McGill University doesn't care, you know? They don't care that, you know, they got this, I don't know if they paid money for it or if they got edX for free. They probably paid for it. But they don't care.
University
that,
pays for it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't care that, you know, it's not the platform is not suitable.
The humanities are never taken into account in these things, just as with computer-assisted language learning. You know, everything we've done in computer-assisted language learning has been based on what people have done for, you know, teaching mathematics, which is not related to language learning. But we make
right.
do,
so
we change,
true.
We try to make the shoe fit even when it doesn't, and a lot of creative things have come out of that.
So it's, how is Coursera?
It's
hand-me-down syndrome we've talked about.
Mm-hmm. It's Nidja. Just to add, the course I did was on FutureLearn. It's called FutureLearn. I think it's the Open University's course. And it was absolutely fabulous. There were, you know, discussions with lots of ways of linking the discussions between themselves. It was really, really well set up. I would love to do another one, but I've never found the time. It was about corpus, using corpuses and corpus linguistics. And it was a really great team.
What? Tell us more about why it was great. Was it the participation of the people in the course or what?
It was great because the people who run it are, again, they really have a lot of knowledge. We had Anthony Lawrence who makes the concordance, the online concordance, or what's it called? I can't remember the name. And they had all of their we don't have teaching assistants, but they had all of their graduate students moderating. So they were really coming back. I think they were interacting because they were all in the same place. All of the moderators were geographically, meaning most of the moderators were geographically in the university. So any questions were immediately addressed. It was actually the content which made it fabulous.
Okay.
Before Vance has to go, I wonder if we could round out the discussion by saying which aspects of MOOCs we think it would be good to emulate in EVO sessions. If, I don't know, if as you know, as I said, there are many different kinds of EVO sessions, but which of the aspects of MOOCs, CMOOCs or whatever, would be good to strive for? And I'm going to let you guys answer that question.
I still think it's kind of a red herring to talk about whether it's a MOOC or not, because a MOOC isn't a thing. It's just a descriptive term. So, you know, I kind of would like to sidestep that question.
I totally agree with you, Elizabeth. I think that it is irrelevant, a name which we give or not. And I think it's good to give it because it's a buzzword now.
I agree. I think we can use it as a buzzword, but that's as far as it should go.
Yeah, it's not a defining term, I think, in many ways. Vance, you probably have a different opinion.
Well, no, it's a similar opinion, but I see what I like about MOOC, or the concept of MOOC, is the way it makes us examine different ways of structuring our interactions online. So, for example, Elizabeth Hanson-Smith described this wonderful MOOC which they're running, which has components which are needed, for example, a directed syllabus, getting people to to learn something, how to make a lesson plan, let's say. So things that you're going to give them a certificate, they need to know how to do something. And plus, you've built in all the components for connectivism. Well, I don't know if it's totally connectivist, but in any event, there's human interaction there. So this is what you're trying to accomplish. And knowing that it's coming from people who are at the peak of their profession in understanding what they're doing and designing courses to accomplish that, this is what the EVO moderators should be looking at. What MOOCs help us to do is understand alternatives or how to deal with the large number of people that you have coming to your EVO sessions. So, mm-hmm. if you have something that, why did you start your MOOC? Me, I want to learn Minecraft, so I wasn't learning it. These other people, they wanted to learn copyright. No, they wanted to learn copyright. Okay, so that's a good reason for starting an EVO session, to try to get some people together to help you to, you know, understand what's going on. And in the case of Minecraft MOOC, it's been a wonderful experience. We're drawing experts into it. So we're actually, you know, Bron Stuckey and Jeff Kuhn and Aaron Schwartz. These guys really know what they're doing. There are a lot of teachers too, Thomas Lawrence and Barbara Wietisch, who both work with kids, and we brought them into our moderating team because they were so active in the last time we put it on. So, you know, we're developing a group that's teaching each other. We have experts teaching people like me who don't know anything. Okay, so that's one reason to start a MOOC. That's not why Elizabeth and the people in Oregon started the shaping the way we teach English. Yeah. Okay. So the people who taught pronunciation had something they wanted to tell people. You know. So take Shelley's getting people to make e-books. You know, so that she's actually, this is where you start. Actually, the Webcast Academy, back when webcasting used to be hard, used to do that. Talking, you know, making a Skype conversation, record a Skype conversation, then take it to the next step, bring some other people in. You know, so if you have a skill you're trying to teach, then yeah, you've got to have this structure here, or how to make a podcast. That was it. Yeah. So these things you need to, you know, if you're conducting the session properly, you are ramping people up. You know, you're bringing people their skill levels up, and so. If that's what you have in mind, that's what you want to do, you know, that's one way to do it. You know what you're doing, and you set a course to bring others into it. So with Minecraft, for example, I don't really know what I'm doing, so but I want to learn. So, and also the guys with copyright. So those are all valid reasons to start EVO sessions and to, you know, develop conversations around what you're trying to learn. So.
Yeah,
you have to be aware of the alternatives.
Yeah, and I see, even with something like Minecraft, I see my granddaughter wants to find out how to do something. She watches all these videos on YouTube about how to use Minecraft, and she'll find something she wants to do, like create a certain kind of game in Minecraft. And she will go and find a video that tells her how to use materials to do those certain things. So she is, you know, self-teaching herself and finding the content. And then, but she gets the ideas from looking at other videos where people say, oh, look, I did this, and here's a game, and this is something you can do. So it's a nice combination of this self-instruction and trying to figure out something as well. And I think it's a great learning experience. And I think your Minecraft MOOC must have been tremendous fun, your Minecraft EVO session. I wish I could have done it at the time.
We have Mariana Smolchitz and her son, Philip. And Philip is doing exactly like your granddaughter. He's a teenager now, or almost a teenager. He's 12 years old now. He's connecting with other people, making videos, learning from other people. Yeah. He's a real connectivist learner. Really interesting.
Yeah, my granddaughter's making videos of her work and putting them on YouTube. At nine years old. That's great.
There you go.
But you could have set up that Minecraft session in a totally different way by 1 week you teach yourself something and then you put it in the EVO as the content for that week and everybody's going to learn this thing that you've taught yourself. But you don't do it that way, which is terrific. I mean, it's much more connectivist to thrash around with it and let people ramp themselves up.
Last year, we joined the Coursera Minecraft MOOC, which was kind of taught in that way, and it was completely differently structured.
Step by step.
I really found it. Well, actually, the first step was, let's do a history of Minecraft iterations, you know, and I just found that was not very practical, you know. Well, we just get in there and do it. We fight monsters, you know. We go in and create first, and then we turn the monsters loose. And
you're right.
And you find out you can survive that. And it would help each other survive.
And then you learn how to spawn your own monsters and so on. It's really fun.
Yeah, Philip does that. He spawns rabbits, actually. This is special.
Right. Oh, well, yeah, you can do that. but it's just two different approaches to how people are learning. And I think EVO can encompass this whole range. The step-by-step, here's what you're supposed to do, and let's explore this together and see what happens and see what we learn in doing it, which is such a wonderful experience, and thank you for doing that.
It starts with defining what you want to do. You know, so if you understand what you want to do, and then you find the appropriate way to do it, and it's nice to have lots of arrows in your quiver. You know, there's C MOOCs, there's X MOOCs, there's forget MOOCs, do it some other way, you know, so... Mm-hmm. It's just nice to be aware of what is out there and the different ways you can structure courses. And that, we've talked about that tonight. So we've brought in lots of experience from you and Nellie, from Nina's courses that she's taken, and Elizabeth. It's been a nice conversation, I think.
Thanks a lot, Vance, for sponsoring us here, and I hope some people do listen to this. It's an interesting talk.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody, for coming.
I'm going to go have whatever I eat.
Okay, bye-bye. November 11th, 2015. This has been some EVO coordinators filling in for moderators who might have followed up on this discussion of why people should be interested in CMOOCs or why they should be interested in other things. So this is Vance Stevens from Align UAE signing off. Anybody else want to sign off? You've already done that. Or whatever, anyway.
Cheers.
Lovely to see Elizabeth again.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.